from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'm on the road filming and going to be broadcasting a lot of commentaries today. I have my own that I wrote yesterday. Plus, I have The Ghost of Fascism in the Age of Trump by Professor Henry Giroux from Truthout. I also have an interesting look at American think tanks are hired purveyors of fake news from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. You've seen them both on the left and the right, the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute, and they're all purveyors of propaganda. There is no sense of fairness and balance in what they offer. It doesn't matter whether it's NPR or Pacifica. You can have legitimate and honest reporting, or you can have biased reporting. How are we to know? And so I'm going to deal with that today. The latest on health and healing, that's where we always start. Plus, last evening, I was asked to turn on Sean Hannity. He was saying something that my friend thought was interesting. And what he was saying is that, well, he was saying two things, but it's how he brought the two together, how he co-joined them, and what that makes of it. On the one hand, he was saying that the real Russian manipulation is by the Clintons and the DNC and high-powered insiders in Washington. And that's been proven. What has not been proven, that Trump colluded. But that is not a defense of Trump. In fact, today I'm going to give you my report card and the Carnegie Mellon Professor Levin report card on Trump's first-year accomplishments and what he's done and how it impacts the world and those in the United States. It's not a, needless to say, it's not a good report card. But the other part of it was talking about the Russians trying to interfere in any way they can in our election. I think it was a total of $47,000 they spent in ads on Facebook. That was nothing. It really didn't make a difference. But here's what Sean Hannity said. We're going to try to find you the clip before I get to that. He said that he believes strongly that we should be interfering and spying on other countries. And even on Laura Ingraham, a very proto-fascist program, the former Woosley, the former CIA director, was on. And when asked, would we intervene in other people's elections, he just laughed and said, well, yeah, yes. That was a non-answer. I'm going to give you the actual answer with real scholarship, because this is a program of record. A lot of people, very serious people, very scholarly people, they know that we do an enormous amount of homework for every show. So when a CIA director's on a show and says, yeah, well, we have, but only because it really was in America's best interest, that's a lie. He was out and out fabricating this. I'll tell you the truth today, and the numbers are staggering. Country by country, amount dead, and this is both for Sean Hannity. So if someone will be good enough later today to download, you can edit just the part where I'm going to share this with Sean Hannity and send it to him if you would, please. And send it to Tucker Carlson and send it to Laura Ingraham, because possibly they're not aware of this information. Maybe they don't have the time to do the research. Maybe they don't have scholars in residence. I do. We do. We take our time. So we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. I've been concerned about electromagnetic frequencies, EMFs. It's radiation. And according to Wake Up World, they did a really good investigative report on this about it. It's leading to breast cancer. According to their report, an increasing pool of research exposure to EMF radiation may be a contributor to the rising rates of breast cancer. scientists studying a number of possible environmental causes for the disease found that perhaps the most significant factor is the extensive amount of electromagnetic radiation from wireless devices, that means cell towers, and Wi-Fi in our environment. Now that they had the new 5 Wi-Fi, you'll see everywhere in America these towers going up. That means that they're bringing in radiation. After all, they're working off satellites. The satellite has a beam that's going down and hitting that, then that pole receives the signals and then sends it out to your cell phone or your computer, or your laptop. The statistics on breast cancer are alarming. The 1 in 8 women right now are predicted to develop breast cancer. And the chance of dying from breast cancer is 1 in 36. In fact, death rates are higher than any other type of cancer for women, except for lung cancer. And breast cancer has to be understood in this context. What is the connection between the electromagnetic frequency radiation and breast cancer? It's a little complicated. It's necessary first to understand the role of melatonin. Now, you all know about melatonin. That's the hormone that comes out at night from your brain, protects your brain, protects your body. It's secreted from this tiny little grape seed-sized gland called the pineal gland. And perhaps melatonin's most commonly known function is regulating circadian rhythms in the body, which govern the waking-sleep cycle. But melatonin is also a powerful scavenger of free radicals. That's a good thing. It traps these free radicals that then cannot go on and damage your cells. And then it helps to facilitate the proper DNA synthesis and cell division, thereby helping prevent cancer. So the surprising function of melatonin that scientists are now focusing on is how it interacts with breast cancer cells. And they're finding that a low level of melatonin in the body stimulates the growth of certain breast cancer cells, whereas higher levels inhibits their growth. Women with breast cancer have as little as 1/10 the amount of melatonin in their bodies that healthy women have. And breast cancer has been shown to be 60% more common among a group of nurses and night shift workers and long-haul airline attendants. These are people who don't sleep regularly at night. And so their pineal glands has a hard time producing enough melatonin for healthy functioning. And for this reason, the International Agency for Research on Cancer has officially stated that night, listen carefully, because I have a lot of people in this audience who've asked me who work at night, police officers and emergency attendants, firefighters, people working at HBO overnight. You talk about really putting themselves at risk. Imagine sitting in front of dozens, even hundreds of monitors, and not realizing that the satellite dishes, huge satellite dishes, either on the roof or in a back lot, they're pulling in all these signals or transporting these signals. Either way, the electromagnetic pulses are coming off those screens. If you think your computer screen is bad, it is. Or your cell phone is hurting your brain, it is. Now multiply that times 1,000. I put it a little differently. I had someone sitting across from me getting counsel when I was in New York recently. And the person is 62. And at one time in their life, they were athletic for about 4 years. But otherwise, they're not that conscious about their diet. And they work a night shift, and they're highly stressed, and they're not exercising. Wonder what could go wrong there. So I made up this chart. I like seeing if I can do functional input, meaning here's what's going to happen if you do A, but here's what can happen if you do B. It's your choice. I don't engage myself in anyone's choices. I'm a big believer in freedom of choice, but also people have to understand, do they have all the information before they make that choice? More often than not, they do not. So I was going through some tables. If you exercise each day, at least 6 days a week for an hour, you can add a certain number of years onto your life. If you're a vegan, a healthy vegan, remember, you can be a vegan that eats pizzas, non-dairy and gluten-free pizzas, but it's still junk. You can drink colas, that's vegan, right? You can eat sugar, that's vegan. So there's a healthy vegan, non-healthy vegan. Anyhow, a healthy vegan who is also at the normal weight and keeps your blood sugar normal and exercises, you can add 9 years onto your lifespan. 9 over the average. So if the average is 78, you're at about 87. Now that does not include de-stressing and getting a good night's sleep and repairing DNA from damage you might have done earlier in your life. So add all that in, and you could easily, it's not difficult, you could add 15 years onto your lifespan, the average lifespan. I have a friend who's 77. In fact, I had 3 friends that turned out 77. One passed, Marty Feldman, but the other two are really in good shape. And one of them is probably in the 1,000th of 1% good shape, eats a good diet, exercises, has a lean body, strong, brilliant mind, and yet he's still concerned about his aging process. And he's right up for doing the good things. And I told him recently there's a whole new paradigm that we're about to change with. In fact, I'm doing some quiet research in this area to show that we can reverse aging of the brain, we can reverse aging of the eyes, the musculature, we can create more human growth hormone. And so he still could, I'm 1 year away from, you know, my average. No. Understand, average means you take the people who are doing everything right, who are going to be lived to 100, and people doing everything wrong, who are going to die in their 50s, and you divide the two and you come up with 78. So you got to understand that everything you do wrong, everything you're going to pay for. No human being escapes this cause and effect. And that's the, in fact, it was interesting. I was blessed and happy to have had older friends in my life. I've had friends my own age, but I've also, since I came to the city, I've had older friends, the great Renaissance artist Paul Swan, the great scientist, in my opinion, the Louis Pasteur of America, even smarter than him, Emmanuel Rivisi. In fact, one night at the Institute of Applied Biology, I was doing some work, Linus Pauling was there. Well, Emmanuel Rivisi came by, as did Abram Hoffer. Hoffer was in town, and that's where I was, so they came by and we were talking. And they began to talk amongst themselves. I'm overdoing some research. And they started talking around 9 o'clock. And around 2 o'clock in the morning, there's silence. I didn't know. I looked over, and Linus Pauling tipped his beret. And he said, I can't go there, which meant that Rivisi just kind of sat there with this little grin on his face. When you can take someone further into chemistry than Linus Pauling, who won the Nobel Prize for chemistry, you got a brilliant mind. Well, he did. And he lived to be 102, by the way, Rivisi. And one of the things Pauling said to me later in life was, after he got his cancer, and he didn't do the holistic therapy. He was a monotheist. He believed in vitamin C, 18,000 milligrams a day. And I said, well, what about 200,000 milligrams? Come over and look at all these people that were reversing their cancer with 200,000, this other stuff. Well, no. We think if a person's brilliant, somehow they're immune from the laws of normal living. They are not. To the contrary. Listen carefully, so it's understanding what I'm saying in context. My personal experience, which could be different than yours, has shown me that the more achieved and brilliant a person is, the more resistant they are to change. So when you are doing damage to your body by not getting a good night's sleep, even if you're a Nobel Prize winner, even if you're a nice guy or woman and genius, you're going to pay for what you didn't get. And sooner or later, that part of your body that has been abused will collapse. We never just have all of our systems die at once. One system dies and it impacts another, or it goes injured, or it goes deficient and impacts another. So anyhow, the message is, and it's an important message, that if you get a good night's sleep, and if you're secreting melatonin, if not, then take 1 to 2 milligrams. You're going to help prevent breast cancer, but you're also going to help your immune system. So when I did the math, if you add this, you take away that. If you don't exercise, you take away these years. If you're working night shift, you take away these years. And it doesn't matter who you are. You can be a nice person, a non-nice person. You can be benevolent or greedy. It doesn't matter. You're going to pay a price. So when people think, well, I'm an ideologue, a social warrior, okay, that's fine. But did you have your berries today? No, they're too trivial. Well, then, friend, you're going to die early. How about that? And then when people die, we wonder, gee whiz, that person was a great activist. Yeah, no doubt about that. But they were so arrogant. They were so caught in this narcissism of identity, this scourge of identity politics. God, do I hate this. I'm going to do a whole series of programs next week on what I think of identity politics and how immature we become as a nation thinking these are relevant. They're not, unless you need something to believe in beyond yourself. In any case, the body is going to give you what you give it. What you don't give it, you will pay for. I don't care what excuse you have. It's in the numbers. You do this, you get this up. You do this, you get this down. So, well, I live a balanced life. I don't go crazy. I don't want to be too much in the vitamins and too much. Then you're telling me, what? What are you doing that's causing a whole lot of damage? And then you try to ameliorate that damage with a little pathetic effort of taking a glass of orange juice or taking a vitamin C. It doesn't work. So just remember this about your melatonin. You don't get melatonin. So when we finished up with all the numbers, my friend came up with 62, meaning this person's at their death date, unless they change. Will they change? Hope so. Hope so for them, their family? Probably not. I'm about 100% certain this person's never going to change anything except their crisis. Oh, that's another thing. The people who don't change, they live through crisis. Talk to them about anything. Oh, my God, you can't believe it. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Well, you got another drama. They should actually have a sign that they have to, by law, you have to carry it around over your head with your arms up, and you have a sign saying, I'm a drama person. Leave me to your crisis. Because, man, they don't have a life. And so one day when their body is racked out and they've got cancer, they've got heart disease, they've got a stroke, they've got dementia. I'm too young to have dementia. Really? What do you think is the right age to have dementia? Dementia is directly related to inflammatory cytokines and what you put in your body. Did you think all that alcohol you had in college and social drinking, did you think that wouldn't impact your brain? That's how we have to look at it. So just remember, all that electromagnetic pulses, it's making a difference, negatively. And yet everybody wants lines up overnight, sleeping on little chairs so they can get in to get their latest device. Wow. Mullein, M-U-L-L-E-I-N, it's an oil. It's in the snapdragon family, and that's a plant that's rich in natural calcium, phosphate, and iron, and magnesium, and sulfur. It's a practical and medicinal plant. You can find it in meadows and pastures. It's used for pulmonary problems, inflammatory diseases, and asthma, and spasmodic coughs, and diarrhea, and migraine, headaches. And the newest research shows that it's very good with earaches. Yeah, acute otitis media. In this study, it made a big difference. So keep that in mind if you know someone who has that. It's easy to get. And also, University of South Florida, they did some cognitive performance exams and showed that aging adults who took just one type of supplement improved tremendously. And that supplement contained blueberries and green tea with vitamin D. And you've heard me mention many times carnosine, C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E. And a 2-month study evaluated the effects of the formula on the cognitive performance of these individuals. By the way, none of them have been diagnosed with memory disorders. And it was a randomized group, and it made substantial difference. This was published in Rejuvenation Research. Quote, after 2 months, test results showed modest improvement in 2 measures of cognitive processing speed for those taking the supplement versus placebo. And by the way, blueberries, that's the top of the top. That's the superstar of them all. That's the Elvis of fruit. Nothing better. Rich in polyphenols, contains polyphenolics and natural phenol substances, and that really helps your brain. And also, if you want faster reflexes, tyrosine, T-Y-R-O-S-I-N-E. Where do you get it? According to the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, spinach. So, you want to be able to move your foot from the gas to the brake faster. You want to be able to maintain your balance. Maybe you'll drop something and quickly you can grab it before it crashes. Tyrosine can make a difference. So it makes a very big difference. And also finally, from the Council of Responsible Nutrition, they found that if you are an individual taking your daily supplements, you are far more likely to engage in a pattern of healthy habits. And they examined 20 peer-reviewed scientific articles and found that, quote, overall, the evidence suggests that users of dietary supplements are seeking wellness and are consciously adopting a variety of lifestyle habits that they consider to contribute to healthy living, end quote. I could verify that because every time I would go back to West Virginia and I would go into any of my friends' homes, they would all be smoking. I'd open up the refrigerator, and I wasn't sure whether they had actually bought cottage cheese or whether that was just milk that had been there too long. They didn't care. Throw some salt on it and eat it. And you could see where they had drank so many times out of different cartons and bottles that there was kind of a lip stain on the item. You step into the shower, which I made the mistake of doing once at my brother's house, and I saw something that was looking awful ugly and smiling back at me. Get all in. And I said, nope. And I went and said, Howard, when was the last time you cleaned your shower? Clean the shower? What do you got a clean shower for? There's water. It cleans itself. I said, Howard, there's some hippies I've met who believe you don't need toilet paper because the body cleans itself. Man, it's groovy. No, it's stinky. And it's gross. But that's never once did I look into a cabinet and find anything healthy or a refrigerator and find anything healthy. I'd find things that were dead, really dead, and super dead. That means that they were kind of foul-smelling and putrid. What is that? Is that bologna? Oh, bologna with mustard on Wonder Bread. You know what you're missing up there? What are you up there eating, carrots? Well, I eat a little more than carrots, but I tell you, I'm not going to eat that. And you sit on the couch and suddenly you start feeling things crawling on you. I said, Howard, how many different cats and dogs do you have sleeping on this couch? All of them. Did you ever think maybe they're fleas and ticks and lice? It's good for you, Gary. It builds up your immune system. I never found any vitamins. I once put some vitamins. I actually put a bottle of vitamin C in my brother's cabinet. I came back 3 months later and it was still there. I said, Howard, I put you some vitamin C there. I know. I show people. Gary brought me some vitamin C. While you're all sitting around smoking cigarettes, having your bologna sandwich on white bread, and waiting to go into a shower which may eat you, that's one day I'm going to write a book about my life growing up in West Virginia. I never saw anyone take a vitamin. I think they would have been arrested. I think there's some ordinance that the police come get you if you take a vitamin. What are you doing that? Taking a vitamin? You're pinky. What are you? Commie. That's what you are. One of those lefties. No. Just have a little common sense. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome everyone to our program. And I was sent what I thought was just an individual showing off 10 vegans that they know and who are very healthy. It was kind of like sexy vegans. And I looked at the pictures, and they were all nice-looking people. They looked very trim. You know, one guy looks like a bodybuilder. And I was thinking, but it was an ad, so I just deleted it. But then I got to thinking, why don't you send me a picture of yourself or your children or your aunts and uncles, anyone who has been a vegan, and show how healthy you are with a little story, a couple paragraphs about what you might have suffered from, what you don't suffer from now, your state of health, how you feel, your energy levels, how you sleep, what you're able to do now that your friends your same age aren't doing. So I'm not interested in the sexy vegan. I'm interested in the healthy vegan. So send me a photograph and a little story about yourself, and I'm going to post them. And that way, when we get enough, people will see people of all walks of life. Yeah, we hear about Carl Lewis, a phenomenal athlete who is vegan, but we don't hear about the average person and how when they go to a reunion, they don't look like any of their friends because of the choices they've made. So just, you can send it over the internet, scan it and send it, prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com. Just a quick coming attractions tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour. I'm going to have Vanessa Beely, this British investigative journalist who's been living in the Middle East, in Gaza, Syria, Yemen, and we're going to get the truth about what's happening over there because we're not getting it in the mainstream or alternative media. Oh, wow, we're just with her. And then tomorrow, I'm going to have Kevin Shipp speaking about the CIA and the deep state. Then I'm going to have Chris Hedges speaking about America's gun culture. And then I'm going to have researchers from Food and Water Watch talking about Trump's infrastructure plan on water, land usage, and other resources, and the privatization of public utilities, which I'm adamantly opposed to any privatization of anything. Now to the first year in office. Now, this is just some of the things. And again, from Professor Levin at Carnegie Mellon, we thank him. And first of all, Trump's tax bill has further empowered the global multinational elite. It has not done anything for the middle class or the poor class in our country that is relevant. It's just burdened us with enormous debt, allowing the banks that manufacture money just by hitting a keystroke. They don't actually go and get money, put it in their vaults, and then loan it to you. That's all a myth. So it's made them phenomenally wealthy. Also, it relaxed agencies going after corporate crime and reduced penalties for corporate misconduct. And in fact, in the Obama administration, they got $17 billion in 1 year. In his whole first year, he only got $1 billion. And he is not allowing class action, rules on class action lawsuits against banks for defrauding customers. As I said last week, with just one bank laundering known terrorist and drug money cartel, and no one went to jail. They got to keep all that money. They paid a fine, but they got to keep all their ill-gotten gains, and no one went to jail. That's just insane. Also, they entered a policy to keep dollar exchange rates at record lows and allow corporations to maximize offshore profits. And they also have policies that will further devastate the environment, such as completely eliminating the USDA's rural water program. They cut FEMA's construction standards for flood preparation. Now, what do you think that's going to do when the next floods come and the next hurricanes in another 3 to 4 months? Just remember, FEMA was not prepared for what happened in Florida, Texas, Louisiana, or Puerto Rico. And the USDA's rule change now makes it harder for small farmers and especially impossible for organic farmers to sue big agri companies. He has supported fracking public lands and national parks, including deregulated pipelines, and rules allowing fracking companies withhold disclosure of the chemicals they use. Well, what about if the chemicals they're using can cause cancer in the air and the water and the soil? He doesn't care. He wants to privatize, or did privatize, public utilities, including water, that will make it unaffordable. It is currently estimated that most people's water bill in these areas will increase by 59%. What if you're in a low-income community, mostly of color? You're going to pay more. What if you don't have more to pay? Your water will be shut off. He has deregulated the U.S. waterways that will result in dirtier and more contaminated water. Infrastructure plans removes environmental reviews for approved roads and bridges and airports. You could imagine the disaster that's going to do to endangered wildlife and water resources and biodiversity and our ecology. He has also privatized public highways and roads, leading to tolls. And I just saw that one toll, a single toll, they're multiple one, but a single one right outside of Washington, D.C. is $47. Wow. So $47 for just one toll? That's because someone got that road and privatized it. He also, there are efforts to protect and give more power to payday lenders, and that's a vicious debt cycle leading to debt peonage and debt prisons. We're not supposed to have debtors' prisons, but we do. And both Obama, Clinton, and Trump have received money from the lobbyists for these private prison systems. Think of it this way. They want to increase the fines for homeless people. Well, if you're homeless, you don't have any money to begin with. So if you're sitting on a bench, true story, I actually spoke with a guy in Florida over near Cape Canaveral. He was a vet. He was sitting in a veterans park reading a book. And when the police came by, they asked him if he was a homeless vet, and he said yes. They gave him a $500 ticket. How are you supposed to pay it? You can't. Then they come and get you, and they put you in prison in the state. And you would think that we would have that as an issue, closing down all private prisons. But we don't. We're in some other stupid thing that we're talking about instead of things that are really essential, like global warming. We're not talking about it. As if it's not going to happen because it's not on our political cheat sheets to talk about. Our talking points don't include what happens with the next hurricane, fires, what happens with global warming. It's not there. So those are just some of the things, including cutting off labor rules that enforce overtime hours and reimbursement, and rescinding commitment to Paris Climate Accord, and expanding of coal companies. Both Obama started clean coal talking points. There is no such thing as clean coal. But you didn't hear a word from the left when he said something really stupid. The difference is he said it with charm. Could you imagine how bad things would be if Donald Trump was actually charming, had a nice personality, had the Bill Clinton touch? Could you imagine then what he could get away with? The fact that he is obnoxious and a narcissist and pathological in his behavior, he is being challenged. The others did at least as bad, and they were never challenged. And he's going to abolish the Rural Business and Cooperative Service, which means small loans for rural businesses wiped out. The Economic Development Administration, which grants small communities for local projects, gone. The Early Awareness and Readiness Program, which grants college preparation to low-income students, gone. The Advanced Research Projects Agency gives support for green energy projects, gone. The National Wildlife Refuge Fund, gone. And yet his two sons have a upstate game compound where you can pay money and go shoot animals. I have photographs of them killing animals. No human being has the right to be out there killing animals. Now, if they both got naked and they went into the bush in Africa and went around to try to strangle a lion, good, try it. Let's see how that comes out. But that's not what cowards do. My God, what a mess. Going to get rid of the NASA Office of Education, getting rid of the Global Climate Change Initiative, getting rid of the Chemical Safety Board, the agency that investigates accidents at chemical plants. wants to get rid of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, getting rid of the Institute for Museum and Library Services that grants to libraries across the nation, wants to get rid of the, abolish the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for Humanities, the Neighborhood Reinvestment Corporation, which funds community projects, and he wants to be big on nuclear. Wow. Yeah, and he wants to create a religious moral protections that would permit discrimination and racism and Islamophobia and other religious phobias under the rubric of protecting health workers. Well, that's just some of the things. It's completely totalitarian. A plan to arrest mayors of cities that don't bow to Trump's immigration rules and offer sanctuary, and purging climate change scientists from federal agencies and silencing voices speaking on behalf of global warming. So, and attempts to have the FCC abolish net neutrality. So that's what we've got, and we're going to examine it differently. Why? Because in the age of Trump, history neither informs the present nor haunts it with repressed memories of the past. It simply disappears. Memory has been hijacked. This is especially troubling when the mobilizing passions of a fascist past now emerge in the unceasing stream of hate and bigotry and lies and militarism that are endlessly circulated and reproduced at the highest levels of government and empower conservative media like Fox News and Breitbart. But also, ask yourself this. When was the last time you saw the Clintons, the Obamas, ask for demonstrations in front of the Pentagon, the CIA, the National Security Agency, as a protest to their globalization, hegemony, and imperialist ambitions with 900 military bases, the intentional undermining of other democratically elected or progressive or liberal regimes around the world? Now, these are liberals who have empowered the government to undermine democratically elected liberal governments, but always supporting fascism, supporting Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates. Yeah, those are really bad countries. Egypt, to name just a few. So that's what we're dealing with. So the next time someone becomes apoplectic because no one is paying attention to this huge military-industrial complex bill that we're paying every year, they're changing the argument because the liberals are as responsible, the Democrats, and the liberals within that corporate Democrat. There's two different types of liberals, those that are more humanistic and adhere to the ethics and morality and decency of the FDR helping others versus the corporate Democrats, the new Democrats that came into power with the Clintons in the early 90s. And they're purely neocons. So what you have is you have power and culture and politics and finance and everyday life now merge in ways that are unprecedented and pose a threat to democracies all over the world. In this mix of old media and new digitally driven systems of production and consumption, not merely systems, but ecologies that produce, shape, and sustain ideas and desires and modes of agency with unprecedented power and influence. Now, according to Henry Giroux, informal education apparatuses, particularly the corporate-controlled media, appear increasingly to be on the side of tyranny. In fact, it would be difficult to overly stress the growing pedagogical importance of the old and new media and the power they now have on the political imaginations of countless Americans. And this is particularly true of right-wing media empires, such as those owned by Rupert Murdoch, as well as powerful corporate entities such as Clearwater, which dominates the radio airwaves with its ownership of over 1,250 stations. And the sphere of television ownership and control, powerful corporate entities have emerged, such as Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns the largest number of TV stations in the United States. It's not just Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity that have audiences in the millions, but the right-wing educational apparatuses shape much of what Americans watch and listen to and appear to influence all of what Trump watches and hears. And the impact of conservative media has had a dangerous effect on American culture and politics and has played the most prominent role in the channeling of populist anger and electing Trump to the presidency. We are now witnessing the effects of this media machine. And remember, Americans are not stupid. There are people who like to think they're stupid and call them stupid. They're not. They are highly sensitive. And what is not being discussed is that they have been betrayed by those on the left and those on the right for decades. They've watched their standard of living implode. They've watched their debt increase. They've watched their stress levels spike. They've watched the fact that they cannot afford to get sick because they don't know if they can be covered, because we have made medicine and healthcare the largest single profit base of any corporate entity in the world history, $3.5 trillion this year. So that's what we're dealing with. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, Sean Hannity made a statement about him supporting our spying on companies, countries. And I just wanted to share this with him in case he is not, or Laura Ingram, who had a CIA director on and threw really softball questions at him. We have had some very successful interventions. 1898 in Cuba and Puerto Rico as part of the Spanish-American War. The U.S. invaded and occupied Cuba and Puerto Rico and the Philippines in 1898. In 1903, it was in Panama. And in 1903, Panama seceded from the Republic of Colombia, backed by the U.S. government amidst the Thousand-Day War. The Panama Canal was under construction by then, and the Panama Canal Zone under the United States sovereignty was then created. We stole it. And then the zone was only transferred back in 2002. In 1903, in Honduras, where the United Fruit Company and the Standard Fruit Company dominated the country's key banana export sector and associated land holdings and railways, saw insertion of American troops in 1903, 1907, 1911, 1912, 1919, 1924, and 1925. Do you remember the writer O. Henry? He coined the term Banana Republic in 1904 to describe Honduras. But again, that was just in Honduras because the United States was going there to protect private corporate interests so that no one could unionize, so that they didn't have to pay a living wage. In 1912, in Nicaragua, which after intermittent landings and naval bombardments in the previous decades, was occupied the U.S. almost continuously from 1912 through 1933. In 1916, the Dominican Republic, also actions 1903, 4, and 14, and the United States occupied the Dominican Republic from 1916 to 24. In 1941, in Panama, the United States government used its contacts with the Panama National Guard, which the U.S. had earlier trained to have the government of Panama overthrown in a coup. The U.S. had requested that the government of Panama allow it to build over 130 new military installations inside and outside the Panamanian Canal Zone, and the government of Panama refused this request, and so we just created a coup and did it anyway. In Guatemala in 1954, the CIA involved in deposing President Jacob Arbenz and installing a military dictatorship that protected the interests of the United Fruit and the Dulles brothers. In Brazil in 1964, the democratic elected president, Goulart, was overthrown in a U.S.-backed military coup under President Johnson. In 1965, in the Dominican Republic again, President Johnson convinced the loyalist forces that this would end up being a second Cuba on American doorsteps and ordered U.S. forces to restore order. There was no order needed restored. The decision to intervene militarily in the Dominican Republic was Lyndon Johnson's personal decision. All civilian advisors had recommended against immediate intervention, hoping that the loyalist side would bring an end to the civil war. In Chile, in 1970 through 73, famous case of democratic-elect Marxist president Salvador Allende being overthrown by the U.S.-backed Augusto Pinochet. And there's Henry Kissinger all over that And then we ended up with 30 years of tyrannical rule and murder. In Honduras, 2009, Hillary Clinton, that's hers. They should have a flag there showing her face cackling and have a little audio box because she defended her stance on regime change in Honduras, forcing socialists and populists and the elected Zelaya into exile in a military coup. Now, the UN condemned it, but who cares what the UN says anyhow? It's toothless. And in Paraguay in 2012, the U.S. meddled with conservative right-wing party to have a democratically elected socialist impeached, Fernando Lugo. In Haiti in 1986, the intelligence support for the repressive and terrorist Duvalier clan after Baby Doc was ousted by the people and Aristide was elected. So the U.S. has always been an enemy of liberation theology and its proponents in Latin America and the Caribbean. Now, we had successful coups in Guatemala, 54, Ecuador in 60, 63, in 2000, Ecuador, Dominican Republic in 63, Bolivia in 64 and 71, Jamaica in 76 through 80, Grenada in 83, Nicaragua in 81 and 90, Panama in 89, Venezuela in 2002, and Haiti in 2004. So we've had all this great success. At what cost? And this is where it's important. Because to Sean Hannity, maybe you misspoke. Maybe you spoke without really qualifying the context. But when you suggest that it's okay for the United States, even desirable for the United States to know what everyone's doing and spy on everyone, the only reason we'd be doing that is because it serves some corporate interests, plans for natural resources or someone else's interest in muddling the waters because we don't want those leftists, we don't want those unions, we don't want those peace activists because they're the ones most likely to interfere in the hegemonic development there. In 2015, there was a study concluded that the U.S. is directly responsible for killing 20 million people in 37 nations since World War II. Indirectly, this figure is much higher, closer to 30 million. The Korean War and Vietnam War, 15 million deaths. Involvement in the Afghan-Soviet War, 1.8 million. Afghan War under Bush, well, we don't know. Angola in 1977, 750,000 deaths. And Hungary in 56, about 37,000. Laos between 1957 and 1970, 580,000, but we're not sure the total number. In Haiti, in 1959, 100,000 killed by U.S.-supported dictator Duvalier. In Indonesia, in 1965, U.S.-supported Suharto in a military coup leading to 500,000 and 1 million civilians killed for being accused as being communists. And later, East Timor, and one of the total deaths in Indonesia was 3 million. But the CIA director says, you know, we don't want communism. Well, it's not communism. These are not based upon communism. These are based upon people using any excuse, since they control the media, to tell people what we should be believing in, and therefore it's acceptable. It's just like in 1965 in the Dominican Republic, Johnson's invasion of U.S. Marines, 3,000 Dominicans were killed. And CIA's Operation Phoenix massacred 20,000 people in Vietnam. In Cambodia, the U.S. government overthrew Prince Soharnik to get Cambodia involved in the Vietnam War and putting CIA puppet Lon Nol in power. Yeah, that's the same Lon Nol who gave rise to the Khmer Rouge, and that Khmer Rouge then killed 2.5 million of its own citizens. In Chile, Pinochet's regime, conservatively 3,000 murdered. El Salvador Civil War, 75,000 killed. Chad, 1982, the CIA-supported dictator, Habré, 40,000 murdered, 200,000 tortured. In Iran wars from 1980 to 88, 268,000 Iranians killed. In Colombia since 1986, 20,000 killed. In the Israeli-Palestine conflict, 200,000 killed. In the Iraq war at 2003, 654,000 killed, according to Johns Hopkins. And then just look at Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton in 1990 in the Somalia Civil War, up to 1 million deaths, including 350 died of starvation. And that was under Clinton's watch. And in Clinton's first term, the Iraqi sanctions killed 567,000 children conservatively, 4,000 under 5 years per month. And his literally rate before sanctions was almost none. And then the 92 to 95 in the Bosnian War, 100,000 killed, 69% civilians. In 94, he could have stopped the Rwanda. He didn't. Kagame is his friend. 800,000 slaughtered. But now they're saying it's closer to 2 million. Honduras in 2009, we don't have a figure, but there were thousands of deaths under Hillary Clinton, including what's interesting is 160 LGBT people died. I didn't see any demonstrations by that community against Hillary. In Libya in 2011, according to Amnesty International, actual death numbers is unknown. 30,000 estimated, 50,000 wounded in Libya. That was a peaceful country. It was a beautiful country. 2013, Syria. That's Obama and Clinton's war. 300,000 to 470,000 dead. In the Ukraine, mostly in Donbass region, 9,100 are dead. And then just in Yemen, 10,000 deaths minimally. So the next time you say we should be involving ourselves in other people's affairs, we should be spying on them, and then using that information, of course, to insert our programs, there's a consequence, unless you don't care about the consequence to other people in their own country. And that is unfortunate if that's the case. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to have I was going to play a short clip here. And I'm not sure I have a clip that's short. Yeah, I do. No cash signs everywhere has Sweden worried, because Sweden wants to go cashless. It would be the first country to really do this. But a lot of movement in the United States to have a cashless United States. Here's what they have to say. Please listen in.
Swedish notes and coins in circulation has dropped to its lowest level in nearly 30 years. And more than a third of Swedes claim that they never use cash, ever. But some are concerned that these changes are happening a little bit too quickly. Let's go and join our reporter, Amanda Bilner, in Stockholm. Amanda, why is Sweden so far ahead in this story in terms of cash usage?
Well, I guess Swedes are quite tech-savvy, you know, they use mobile payments a lot, they use cards a lot in shops, and banks have even stopped accepting cash in many cases. So, well, it's happening quickly.
It certainly is. And why is so it is happening quickly, and in some ways this is good for central banks. So central banks want to use non-traditional monetary policy, like negative interest rates, etc. Cashless society works for them on that front. There's also an issue of the fact that you get a lot more data very quickly, and therefore you have a better idea of what's going on in the economy. Given all of that, why is the Riksbank worried about this?
Well, the Riksbank is, in a way, it was positive when they wanted to lower their interest rate below zero, because they were able to, without customers taking out money from the banks, because the banks kept interest rates at zero in savings accounts. So even though there was a negative interest rate, actually bank customers...
Let me explain what they're doing, because you may not be aware of this. They're saying that when you put money in a bank, you get no interest. Now it's negative interest. So if you put $100 in the bank, you can only get like $98 out. They're taking a negative interest. Now they're making money. But also that's one thing. Separately, they have all the information on you. Everything is in these computers now, and these systems, every purchase you make. Now, what could possibly go wrong in the United States if we went to a cashless society? Well, how about 200 million Americans don't have any cash? How about people don't have $500? They live paycheck to paycheck. What happens if you didn't have cash and yet you wanted to buy something and all you have was a small amount of money, dollar, $5? Are you aware that there are almost 4 million Americans who live on less than $2.50 a day? What a third world country would do. Well, you're not going to be able to buy anything. So what do we do with all those millions of people who don't have enough money to have one of these chips or these where it, now they want to embed it in your right between your thumb and your forefinger, a chip that would be able to record everything? Oh, you just want something, you just, you know, put your hand and it's red. And all the information about your buying habits, your traveling, you couldn't get on an airplane, you couldn't get on a bus, you couldn't ride a cab, you couldn't go into a restaurant, you couldn't buy clothes unless you had this chip or this card. And then what about those who are social activists? What about those who have protested anything? What if they wanted to turn it off so that you couldn't buy anything as a form of punishment? Do you think they would? Look what they've done. They've infiltrated every activist group. They had every single one of the meetings of Occupy Wall Street. They had agent provocateurs. They had informants in every single meeting in America. That's according to WikiLeaks. So just imagine the hundreds of thousands of Americans who now have all their identity in these databases. And then the government decides, or someone in an agency decides that, well, one way we can stop that person is keep them from getting to point A to point B. They have to go through a toll. They can't get through the toll. They can't take public transportation. They can't take anything. They can't buy anything. They couldn't buy, you know, water or food to get to a place to demonstrate. So, in effect, we cause them to wither and die on the vine. Would we do that? You bet. We've done a lot more. Just go back and look at MKUltra and some of the other programs the government has sponsored. And now they've been spying on us illegally for all this time. They know as much about us as they can. They're actually censoring websites. So don't for a heartbeat think that they wouldn't do anything they could to identify, isolate, and destroy, as they're doing now with trolls and agent provocateurs, the reputation of anyone who is taking a position that is contrary to the government or to private interests' future. Just something to think about. And yet Americans will be sold on how wonderful it'll be. And most of them will say yes to it without thinking. That's it for today. Tomorrow I have a lot of different topics, and I'll get into my other commentaries. And listen tonight, because you're going to hear a riveting, insightful program from a woman journalist who does not honor the mainstream media. She honors the truth. And you won't want to miss hearing the truth of what's going on in Syria, in Libya, in Yemen. 7 p.m. PRN.FM. Have a nice day, everyone.